What does a documentary about Princess Diana...
My husband put his hand on my waistline and said, oh, a bit chubby here, aren't we?
...have in common with a documentary about the L.A. riots?
And people are outside shooting.
Well, I'm Matt Holzman, and we'll answer that question today on The Document, looking at the world through the lens of documentary film.
Do I sound good?
When you say it like that, you do.
Marijuana, the burning weed with its roots in hell.
The Lotus came up with the slogan, Si se puede.
Jim Jones came to talk to me, and the first thing he said was, don't say anything to the reporters, they're all liars.
The Document is KCRW's mashup of documentaries and radio. I call this week's episode, The Lost Tapes. In the last 10 years, documentary producer Tom Jennings has become a bit of a specialist in making movies using footage and audio that most people have never seen or heard. But Jennings' latest film about Princess Diana goes farther than just taking you back into history. It gives you another way into a story that's already so well picked over, there doesn't seem to be room for anything new.
This year, it's the 20th anniversary of her death in Paris, and we started, going out and looking at the usual suspects for archival material. And every place we went, we'd get the same response from archivists, basically saying, "Oh, you're the sixth production company that's called us this week for Diana's stuff."
Jennings had an idea. In 1992, English journalist Andrew Morton released a bombshell behind-the-scenes book called Diana, Her True Story. He said that Diana worked with him on the book. Buckingham Palace denied it, and a lot of people just would not believe it. Diana only admitted that she'd sat for the interviews years after the book came out.
And I knew a little bit about the story behind the book, in that Princess Diana actually asked him to write that book through a mutual friend of theirs, a guy named Dr. James Coulthurst. And so the three of them devised a plan, because Morton was too well known as a journalist to be going to Kensington Palace to interview Diana. She was afraid that her phone lines were tapped. I mean, it was a very strange, weird time in the monarchy. And her marriage was in deep trouble, and she knew it, and she was fed up. The fairy tale was actually a nightmare, and she wanted people to know. So what they did is James Coulthurst, every few months, would ride literally his bicycle up to Kensington Palace and be waved through by the guards because they knew him as a friend of Diana's. They had known each other since their childhood. And he would have with him a list of questions from Andrew Morton, and he would have a tape recorder, and they would find some quiet room in the palace, and they would sit for an hour or two, and he would ask questions.
You have to remember that Diana was a shy 19-year-old kindergarten teacher when she got married. And you can imagine, she was totally overwhelmed by the straitjacket of her new life and the unblinking eye of the press. And while she was dubbed the People's Princess, in private, she was often humiliated by her new husband and his family. After a decade of marriage, she decided to tell her side of the story through an intermediary, Andrew Morton. His book caused a crisis at Buckingham Palace, and some people say it changed the English monarchy forever. The tapes of her interviews were quietly hidden away in a safe deposit box in a London bank. Only snippets have ever been heard.
I picked up the phone and I called Andrew Morton's publisher, a guy named Michael O'Mara in London. And he immediately told me that he had been asked, especially by the British press many, many times, for access to the tapes. And he'd always said, no. I came up with the idea of, what if you had a show that was narrated just by Diana and no one else? Wouldn't that be extraordinary? And about 10 days later, I was on a flight to London. Michael O'Mara's office is in the south side of the city of London. It's actually in this little courtyard. It's right out of a Dickensian fairy tale type of thing. It's got a thatched roof and ivy-lined walls on the outside. And I went into Michael's office, and it's not a very large office. It's got a desk and, of course, lined with bookshelves with hundreds and hundreds of books. And he had a small, like a coffee table with a love seat and a couple of chairs around it on one side of the office. And he sat me down there and he said, I'll be right back. And he comes back in and he has a safety deposit box with the actual tapes that Diana made with James Colthurst. And the first thing I said is, can I touch them? You know, because I'm thinking, wow, these are historic.
Of course, Michael O'Meara had digitized the tapes. So he put the original cassettes back in their safe deposit box, and he started to play the audio from his computer speakers.
It was pouring rain outside, and they had a small skylight. And he had an assistant bring in tea and sandwiches throughout the day. And I sat there and I listened to Diana talk like she was in the room with me.
Right. Questions, here we are. Do you remember what your first ever memory was?
In this life?
In this life. Yes.
Yeah, I remember my first engagement so well. I remember being so excited. I got this black dress from the Emmanuels. And I thought it was okay because girls of my age wore this. I hadn't appreciated that I was now seen as a royal lady, although I'd only got a ring on my finger as opposed to two rings. And I remember walking into my husband-to-be's study, and saying, I'm ready. And he said, you're not going in that dress, are you? And I said, yes, I am. He said, it's black. I said, yes, it's black. But black, only people in mourning wear black. And I said, yes, but I'm not part of your family yet. In black, to me, was the smartest colour you could possibly have at the age of 19. It was a real grown-up dress. And I was quite big-chested then, and everyone got fat excited. And I learned a lesson that night. I remember meeting Princess Grace and how wonderful and serene she was. But there was troubled water under her. I saw that. Yes. And all sorts of other things. It was a horrendous occasion. I didn't know whether to get out the door first. I didn't know that your handbag should be carrying your left hand, not your right hand. All that I've learned, obviously. But at the time, everything was all over the place. I remember that evening so well. I was terrified. I was sick.
And what was going through your mind as you started to hear her speak?
Remember, she's talking to a friend of hers. She's very engaging in the way she has a conversation. She's very kind of lively and funny. And there's a moment on the first tape where she starts talking about her childhood. And James Colthurst says, what was your first memory?
After being born, so anything as a child?
It's really the smell of the inside of my pram.
Right.
Mm.
Remember that?
Yes, very, yes.
Right.
Yeah. It's the smell of pram. I don't know, it's plastic. It's the hood.
Wet.
Yes, probably.
Yeah.
That was the first moment of many moments where I looked over at Mike O'Meara and I said, oh my God, her laugh.
Tom Jennings was just there to check that the audio quality was good enough to use in his film. But he sat there and he listened to all 7 hours of Diana in one sitting.
It was so endearing. And throughout these tapes, she, you know, tells jokes and she's, laughing at herself. She was very self-deprecating. So the main things that I walked out of that room with were, wow, she has the most beautiful laugh. And I had no idea that she could be so introspective.
A few weeks later, a disc with the audio of Diana's interviews was hand-delivered to Jennings in cloak-and-dagger fashion to a Starbucks in Sherman Oaks, and his team began to craft what would become the film Diana in her own words.
You know, what we did is that we would take her telling this story and we would juxtapose her behind-the-scenes story with the very famous images, one of which in the film is a few days before the wedding. She goes to Emmanuel's, which was the dressmakers that had made her wedding dress.
News of Lady Diana's visit spread quickly. Shoppers waited in pouring rain, while staff from nearby offices abandoned work for half an hour. Lady Sarah Spencer was there to give a sister's opinion of the wedding dress. It's been slightly altered. The crowd saw that, like most brides, Lady Diana has lost weight as the day approaches.
And what we did is then we, underneath that, had her start describing how the bulimia began.
Bulimia started the week after we got engaged. My husband put his hand on my waistline and said, oh, a bit chubby here, aren't we? And that triggered off something in me. And I remember the first time I made myself sick, I was so thrilled because I thought, right, this is the release, the tension. And I went, when the first time I got measured for my wedding dress, I was 29 around the waist. The day I got married, I was 23 and a half. I'd shrunk into nothing. But I, yeah, no, no, it was, what was it? We got February to July. Just shrunk into nothing. And so there we are.
And it's very, very powerful to put that up against the images where you maybe wouldn't pay so much attention to how thin she was. But then when you hear her telling the story of why she's so thin, everything comes full circle.
Even if you followed her story closely, even if you read the book she was interviewed for, there is something completely new about hearing Diana tell her story, not just in her own words and in her own voice, but to an old friend in a private sitting room at Buckingham Palace. It's ironic to think that someone who had a camera and a microphone stuck in her face everywhere she went is only now really getting to tell her story her way, 20 years after her death. Coming up in a minute, we finally answer the question, how is a documentary about Princess Diana like a movie about the LA riots? You're listening to The Document. I'm Matt Holzman, and this is The Document from KCRW. Today's episode is The Lost Tapes. The latest documentary from producer Tom Jennings is called Diana, in her own words. It's an intimate portrait of Princess Diana using secret interviews conducted for a tell-all book that was released in 1992. That same year, LA burst into flames.
A moment ago, we saw several explosions come up from that building. I'm not sure what is contained in that building.
By now, the narrative of the LA riots is pretty well cut in stone. The tape of Rodney King's beating, the acquittal of the officers involved, the abandonment of black neighborhoods by the police, and the civil unrest that followed. Five really fine documentaries came out this year to commemorate the 25th anniversary of the riots, and all of them are trying to bring some new context to the accepted narrative, mostly through interviews with the key players or academics and activists. Tom Jennings' film The Lost Tapes, LA Riots, does that too. But it also features voices of the everyday people who lived through what happened.
Okay, I just had a comment about the situation that's going on. I'm upset, I'm disgusted, and I'm hurt.
As with Diana, the Lost Tapes LA riots, you're always fighting, you know, like, how am I going to do this differently than my colleagues that are doing it for another channel? So we started doing research. I had a couple of wonderful researchers on my staff. I said, you know, find me the local stuff, local reporting. And I particularly like local radio.
102.3 KJLH Compton, Los Angeles.
KJLH is a local FM station that plays mostly R&B and classic soul. But after the jury acquitted the police officers for the beating of Rodney King, South LA started to burn. And KJLH temporarily went all talk.
What I'm really appalled about is that they're burning down the AM, PM, and that they forget that people live behind the AM, PM.
Thank you.
Trying to burn us down with it, okay? And also, we were standing outside, and people are outside shooting. Have they forgotten that we have babies here?
They became the place that people could call to feel like, you know, somehow we're going to get through this. And I think what they did was extraordinary. It was a record that people have forgotten and I felt needed to be shared again and to remind people that the struggles that those callers and disc jockeys were feeling in 1992 still echoes today.
It's like I live in South Central, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I woke up this morning, and my whole car was covered with debris from burning buildings. You know, it's like, I do not condone all this burning, you know, because to me, it makes no sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It makes no sense.
Much like the Diana film, the juxtaposition of the reality of what is being felt and said on that radio station versus the news footage that we had acquired was remarkable. There was, you got a side of that riot story that wasn't being reported anywhere else.
Our community is turned into a firebomb. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's like every corner I turn, there's something burning. You know,
just generally, you're frustrated. Yeah, I'm very frustrated, you know, because I don't have no neighborhood no more.
I think if there's any one emotion that I gather from the tapes that I've heard is sadness.
Sadness, yes, I agree. Great sadness. I would maybe even take it a step farther. I mean, it's easy to label it anger or desperation, but in some ways, I got out of them a hopelessness.
Spent the last 10 years of my life in college. I went to one of the best law schools in the country, Hastings, up in San Francisco. But it doesn't really matter, because even with a briefcase in my hand and a suit on my back, I'm still just another nigger to the cops out there and to the redneck white people, and not all white people, but to the people who don't really care who you are and what you're about. And I know that I'm not the only one who feels helpless.
You know, it gives you pause when you think, yeah, it's easy to just, you know, put together, you know, a string out of all of these iconic events, you know, the moments within the riots, and tell the story and, oh, isn't it awful what happened? But then when you get to people who are calling in and expressing, you know, what I would say is hopelessness, you realize that this goes so much farther beyond, you know, a shot from a helicopter showing the city on fire.
Yeah, I think basically you could say that all hell broke loose in these inferno fires as we've watched one building after another burn to the ground. For the most part, they have been burning to the ground. There's been a couple that the fire department got to real early, but we have watched them burn down to the foundations, and that is
what we've done. Our system is so screwed up that honestly, I don't even see a good solution to it.
I am glad to hear guys call up who are thinking.
There you go.
You know, so what that we don't have the answer tonight? I mean, me and Brandon and Chris aren't going to come up with the answer tonight, I don't think. Maybe you got the answer. I don't know.
No, I don't have it.
Okay. We'll keep on thinking about it.
KJLH dumped all commercials for more than 3 days and took listener calls and provided news and information to the community. The media does its best to cover breaking news. And over time, those stories evolve and some blanks are filled in and a narrative emerges, even if it misses a lot of the nuance of what really happened. And with the ever-increasing speed of the news cycle, that is only getting worse.
I think, you know, this inundation of information is driving us away from really getting to the heart of what's going on and understanding not only of the facts, but an understanding of the humanity behind those facts.
I think we're just making a very strong case for documentaries here.
I agree. I think we do get a chance to step back and, you know, try and figure out a little bit more about what's going on.
And that's The Document for this week. For more information about Diana in her own words and the lost tapes LA riots, go to kcrw.com/thedocument. We've also got information and links to the clips in the intro to the show. If you want to communicate with us, send us an email at thedocument@kcrw.org or get social at documentkcrw on Facebook or Twitter. I'm Matt Holzman, and I produce today's show with Sarah Pellegrini, Mike Schlitt, Bridget Kelly, and Ray Guarna. Gary Scott is KCRW's program director. The Document is a production of KCRW.